It is Monday, September 18th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, U.S. President Donald Trump calls for reforms at the United Nations.
The United Nations has not reached its full potential because of bureaucracy and mismanagement.
The United Nations says those responsible for crimes against Syrian civilians must be brought to justice. And a local program in Baltimore tries to soothe the anger of young men. It's all ahead. World leaders are gathering at the United Nations for its annual General Assembly. Today, President Donald Trump spoke at a U.S.-hosted meeting on reforming how the world body is managed. The meeting was held on the sidelines of the annual U.N. General Assembly.
The United Nations has not reached its full potential because of bureaucracy and mismanagement. While the United Nations on a regular budget has increased by 140% and its staff has more than doubled since 2000, we are not seeing the results in line with this investment.
I'm joined by VOA UN correspondent Margaret Beshear. Margaret, what kind of reform is the U.S. urging?
Well, the president, you know, in his former life is a businessman, and so he's into the cost-cutting measures and the efficiency and that sort of a thing. So we're talking about cutting red tape at the UN. There's a lot of bureaucracy. For instance, it takes about 8 months to hire somebody to work at the United Nations. So they're trying to get them to streamline some of these cumbersome processes.
Yeah. U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley said the United States wants a better United Nations and not a smaller one.
Right. And so does the United Nations, by the way. I mean, the Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, it's also his first U.N. General Assembly this year. He took office in January. He campaigned for the job on a platform of reforming the organization, which is bloated, and it does have too many staffers and such. So there is certainly room to trim, as Nikki Haley likes to say, to trim the fat.
Well, President Trump was very negative about the UN during his campaign for the White House, and tomorrow he's going to address the General Assembly. How do you think he'll be received, and is it known yet what his major theme will be?
Well, I think everyone's really curious the first time a U.S. president comes here, but they're extra curious this year because Mr. Trump doesn't have a politician's background. So they haven't seen him previously as a foreign minister or something like that. So they're very curious, and especially because he's promoted this America First agenda, and he's sort of rejected multilateralism and gone more to the isolationist side of the political spectrum. And so people are anxious and excited to hear what he has to say. And I think we're going to hear a lot about North Korea. This is the most pressing global issue right now. So people expect to hear him talk about this. And his administration has made very clear that there is a military option. They're not afraid to use it, but that it's not their first choice. So we'll see where he goes and what direction he goes on Tuesday with that. I think that's the main thing. We'll also expect to hear from him on climate change. The U.S. has said, this administration has said they will pull out of that deal that President Obama helped negotiate in France. And, you know, the question is, will we really pull out? And I think they're expecting to hear something on that. There's been a bit of talking about it the last few days, will we, won't we? The Iran deal 2015, another Obama legacy achievement. Trump doesn't like it, says it's a terrible deal, wants to tear it up. So we're going to expect to hear something on that on Tuesday as well.
All right. Thanks very much, Margaret. That's Margaret Beshear at the United Nations. Well, as Margaret was just reporting, North Korea remains a persistent problem to the United States and to the international community as a whole. Well, ahead of President Trump's first address to the UN General Assembly, the U.S. Ambassador Nikki Haley on Sunday said the Security Council has pretty much exhausted all it can do to rein in North Korea's missile and nuclear programs. Haley warned Pyongyang will be destroyed if it keeps on with its reckless behavior, and the U.S. has to defend itself and its allies in any way. Appearing Sunday on the CBS program Face the Nation, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said U.S. policy is to deny North Korea a nuclear weapon and the capability of delivering that weapon.
Our strategy has been to undertake this peaceful pressure campaign, we call it, enabled by the four no's. The four no's being that we do not seek regime change, we do not seek a regime collapse, we do not seek an accelerated reunification of the peninsula, and we do not seek a reason to send our forces north of the demilitarized zone. So the peaceful pressure campaign is built around putting together the largest and strongest international coalition we can to send the same message to North Korea and to North Korea's neighbors, China and Russia, that this is the policy of the rest of the world. And you've seen that expressed now in two unanimous Security Council resolutions to impose the strictest sanctions ever. All of that designed to bring North Korea to the table for constructive, productive dialogue. If our diplomatic efforts fail, though, our military option will be the only one left. So all of this is backed up by a very strong and resolute military option. But be clear, we seek a peaceful solution to this.
Tillerson said China and Russia have a big role to play in cutting two revenue streams that fund the North's weapons programs and economic activity, energy, and foreign workers. He said China is North Korea's main supplier of oil, while Russia hosts some 30,000 North Korean guest workers. He said Washington is still waiting for a positive North Korea response for productive, constructive talks. Tufts University Korea expert Sun Yun Lee tells International Edition's Victor Beatty, while he expects further North Korean testing, he does not believe a military showdown is imminent.
Technically, at the UN, there's not all that much that the Security Council can do. We know we expect more nuclear tests and missile tests, and the Security Council will respond, as it has over the past decades, with tougher sanctions measures on paper. But, you know, the crux of the problem always is enforcement. If the member states don't enforce these sanctions, the toughest sanctions on paper have little meaning. So I don't think we should interpret Ambassador Haley's comments as any sign that the U.S. is seriously considering military strike anytime soon. There's been no ultimatum, no deadline set for North Korea's behavior.
Yet she said she's prepared to hand the matter over to Defense Secretary Jim Mattis.
Well, sure, but in fact, you know, the U.S. security, protecting the lives of tens of millions of Americans, that is not on the line yet. Military response will come when that becomes a looming question, when there is clear and imminent danger of a North Korean nuclear strike. Then the military option becomes more than an option, it becomes an imperative. Ambassador Haley's comment reflects her own frustration and the frustration on the part of the U.S. government that, you know, North Korea has been on this bluster barrage all throughout this year, and now with the UN General Assembly meetings to begin this week, I think Ambassador Haley is trying to send signals to Beijing, to Moscow, and other countries to get them on board to enforce sanctions.
White House National Security Advisor H.R. McMaster on Sunday said this regime, referring to North Korea, is so close now to threatening the U.S. and others with a nuclear weapon that we really have to move with a great sense of urgency on sanctions, on diplomacy, and preparing, if necessary, a military option.
Well, that's true, of course, and for far too long, as the administration repeats, the U.S. has, all predecessor administrations have kicked the can down the road. They procrastinated, taken half measures, and so on. At the same time, I would not really read too much into these harsh-sounding comments. On one hand, there is the utility of sending a strong message, yes, to the adversaries of the United States. At the same time, if you talk it up too much, then the U.S. comes across as the party that's motivated by aggression, which is not very good in terms of world public opinion.
That is Sun Yung Lee of Tufts University. He was speaking with International Edition's Victor Beatty. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. So, Andrew, what's happening?
Well, trending worldwide today, UNGA, of course, stands for UN General Assembly, the United Nations there in New York, as we heard from Margaret Bashir. Lots of focus on President Trump today as he spoke at a panel talking about reforms for the UN. Actually, just after he completed that panel, he tweeted out and commended Secretary General Antonio Guterres and his call for the UN to focus more on people and less on bureaucracy. Of course, going after the UN and reforming the UN was something that President Trump talked about during the campaign, kind of this red meat for his base, sometimes painting the UN as an enemy or the international stage as being against the US. So certainly something that his supporters are appreciating. But we're seeing a lot of other items being talked about, discussions of climate change in the environment, North Korea, as we just heard from our North Korea expert. So lots of different things being discussed there in New York. And we're seeing a lot of social media from none other than the United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres himself, kicking off the UNGA with a Facebook Live, taking questions from around the world about the work of the United Nations. We're seeing hashtag UNGA trending on Twitter as these different moments and video clips come up. And we're seeing a lot of groups use social media as an advocacy tool to target particularly world leaders who are at the UNGA to try to influence them on different policies, on different advocacy points that they're trying to get across. So using that as a very powerful tool there in New York. The other big story that's trending from last night into today is the 69th Emmy Awards. These are the awards out in Hollywood to honor television's greatest and best over the past year. A very politically charged ceremony. Host Stephen Colbert had a politically fueled monologue that had a lot of people talking, different moments throughout the show referencing President Trump or hatred and bigotry in the U.S. and combating those. Alec Baldwin won for his portrayal of President Trump on Saturday Night Live, which is a consistent trending topic anytime he goes on TV Saturday night to play President Trump. And he joked when he won the Emmy, he said, "President Trump, finally you can say you've won your Emmy," because that was something that the president had talked about previously, that his show The Apprentice had never won an Emmy. But we're seeing also, among all the jokes and things, some history being made, a lot of women and minorities being honored for comedy directing and writing in particular. And then you're seeing the big awards go to some politically charged shows, the fake Washington show Veep winning Best Comedy, and Best Drama going to The Handmaid's Tale, which is an adaptation of Margaret Atwood's dystopian novel about women in the future, mistreatment of women, and relegated to a second-class citizens. But the moment that had a lot of people talking about Washington, Sean Spicer, former White House press secretary, making an appearance, joking as he did right after the inauguration that it would be the biggest Emmy audience ever to watch the Emmys. And this appearance divided the internet. Some said he should be welcomed and it was a funny moment. Some said that it was a bit of a poor taste with some of the things that he defended in the Trump White House for him to be lauded like that. But it definitely had people talking.
Yeah, so certainly did. Yes. All right, well, thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Here are some of the top news stories trending. Ethiopia's regional tensions spill over, leaving at least 18 people dead. The United Nations says Islamic State is expanding its activities to 7 Afghan provinces. The U.S. and allied warplanes stage live fire exercises over the Korean Peninsula. And the U.S. is considering closing its embassy in Cuba. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the voanews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
English poet Geoffrey Chaucer once said, "All good things must come to an end." And so it goes with NASA's Cassini mission, which provided a close-up look of Saturn, its moons, and famous rings over the last 13 years, came to a blazing end on September 11th. Like a scene from a Shakespeare tragedy, the space agency sent the spacecraft plunging through the ring planet's thick atmosphere to its total destruction. Earl Mays, the Cassini program manager, announced the end of the mission.
Just heard the signal from the spacecraft is gone, and within the next 45 seconds, so will be the spacecraft.
NASA says even as it was being sent on its fiery final journey, the spacecraft continued to collect and transmit valuable data back to Earth. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, a program in Baltimore helps troubled young men. UN UN investigators are calling for perpetrators of crimes against civilians in Syria's long-running civil war to be prosecuted and brought to justice. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA the latest report submitted to the UN Human Rights Council in Geneva by the International Commission of Inquiry on Syria documents multiple atrocities and gross violations committed by all warring parties.
The Commission of Inquiry has run out of patience with UN member states it accuses of having done little to hold perpetrators of crimes in Syria accountable. Commission Chair Sergio Pinheiro calls the deadlock at the Security Council on Syria after 6 years of war reprehensible and at times bewildering. He tells delegates at the UN Human Rights Council that civilians continue to be deliberately attacked, deprived of humanitarian aid, forcibly displaced and arbitrarily detained, or held hostage by all warring parties. He says most civilians are killed and maimed by the unlawful use of conventional arms, particularly through indiscriminate shooting and aerial bombardments in populated areas.
We have a duty and our mandate, however, to document the unambiguously illegal use of prohibited chemical weapons in blatant violation of international law and attribute responsibility accordingly. In several instances, government forces used chemical weapons against civilians in opposition-held areas, including in Khan Sheikhoun, Idlib, on 4th April.
Pinheiro says that chemical attack killed 80 people, mostly women and children, injuring hundreds more. He says the attack took place during a Syrian and Russian aerial campaign in northern Hama and southern Idlib that targeted medical facilities. These charges elicited a hostile and angry reply from Syrian Ambassador Hussam Aden Alla, who accused the commissioners of using fabricated, biased information from unreliable sources. He called the assertion his government used chemical weapons a pack of lies. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. Bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, this is Larry London, the host of VOA's Border Crossing. I feature music and interviews with your favorite artists from all around the world. And you can not only listen, but you can interact live with us here in Washington, D.C. Border Crossings comes to you Monday through Friday at 1500 UTC GMT on VOA.
This is International Edition. In Greek, pneuma means breath and spirit, and that's the core philosophy of a relatively new program in Baltimore, Maryland, with the same name. Pneuma combines exercise, yoga, and leadership training. Behind this program is a near-death experience that made a young man bitter and angry, then led him to becoming forgiving and proactive. As Faiza El-Masri reports, Damian Cooper founded Pneuma to teach boys how to control their anger and inspire them to achieve their dreams in life. Faith Lapidus narrates.
One, two, three, four.
Twice a week, all year long, a group of about two dozen boys gathers at Baltimore Police Academy to participate in Pneuma.
What is your vision?
To strive to teach our young men the art of forgiveness, self-control, and discipline.
They joined the program because they had difficulty focusing in school or controlling their impulses. Here, they exercise and meet with adults who care about them, like school principal Nicomar Mosley, who volunteers with the program.
We allow our students to engage in the different push-ups and the sit-ups and things that will build them physically, sometimes with the physical push that helps to keep their minds focused.
Pneuma founder Damian Cooper says other exercises focus on breathing.
We want our young men to understand that oftentimes they're acting off of impulse actions. And they don't think about what they're doing, they just act. So what we try to do is get them to slow down. If you take a deep breath, it slows things down.
And that makes it easier for them to control their anger and learn to forgive. Cooper says it took him more than 4 years to learn this lesson. 24 years ago, he was shot, and the bullet stopped within an inch of his heart. He became very bitter and angry until he decided he had to move on.
I started doing some volunteer work in a prison, and unbeknown to me, for a year and a half, I wound up mentoring the very young man who shot me. And once we found out that this was a young man, I forgave him.
Finding the strength to forgive is one of the lessons Project Numa kids learn. Cooper's 14-year-old son Nigel says joining the program is a transforming experience.
My best friends have gone through this program, and they used to always fight no matter what somebody would say to them. But now they calm down to the point where you could push them and they could look at you and just be like, shrug their shoulders.
The participants range in age from 9 to 14.
As we look at the older students, they work together to help the younger students. It gives the younger children an opportunity to look up to someone and to develop a big brother within the program. So it develops leadership amongst our children, and it also helps keep it diverse. So the program is ever evolving as those children that are currently participating, they grow up, they get older, and they become the mentors for the younger participants.
Numa is also engaging these boys, young and old, in serious discussions about themselves and their community.
But the fact is, some of you guys want to be mathematicians, engineers, civilians, and you know what? You've seen the work of animals, right?
The Numa founder says the results so far suggest that the program is working well.
Since we started Project Numa, none of the young men have been suspended at all, not one. Because the parents allow us to come to the school and to check on their sons. We check report cards, we check grades, we pop up, and we make sure that they stay on task.
14-year-old Virtue Bama says he's always excited about attending NUMA sessions.
This program is very invigorating. This program is very fun for me to be around.
Not only is it invigorating and fun, but kids have stayed with the NUMA project for more than 3 years now, because it offers something many of them are missing in their lives: encouragement, moral support, and consistency. For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Thank you, Faith. That is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. and Kuwait have agreed to a number of initiatives that will deepen the ties between the two nations through a process known as the Strategic Dialogue. This includes enhancing Kuwait's military capabilities by providing F-A-18s. In addition, FBI Director Chris Wray and Minister of Interior Al-Jarrah Al-Sabah Khaled signed a counterterrorism information-sharing arrangement. And Customs and Border Patrol and the Kuwait Director General of Customs signed an agreement to share customs information. The U.S. and Kuwait signed two additional memorandums of understanding. The first is an education MOU between the Department of State and Kuwait's Ministries of Education and of Higher Education. This MOU will help prepare Kuwaiti students to study in the United States and encourages relations between U.S. and Kuwaiti institutions of higher education. The second MOU between the Department of Commerce, Select USA, and Kuwait Direct Investment Promotion Authority will encourage additional bilateral investments in both countries. The U.S. recognizes Kuwait's efforts to help bring about a settlement to the Gulf Cooperation Council, or GCC, dispute, including Egypt. The United States and Kuwait both recognize the importance of GCC unity to meet the challenges of the region, not least of which are the threats from Iran, said Secretary of State Rex Tillerson. We appreciate that Kuwait hosts U.S. military facilities and makes significant contributions to America's initiatives directed at Kuwaiti and regional security. We are pleased that we are increasing our security cooperation and information sharing to prevent threats we both face, said Mr. Tillerson. The United States also appreciates Kuwait's leadership on humanitarian assistance, which helps stabilize the region. In recent years, Kuwait has provided more than $9 billion in humanitarian support in Syria, Iraq, Jordan, and Lebanon. Kuwait is the second largest single country donor to these efforts worldwide after the United States. Secretary Tillerson said we look forward to implementing the new agreements and strengthening our partnership for years to come.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.